did of the grant. I first want to say that I have been just very, very pleased with the participation that so many of you have had in the additional technical assistance programs, the coach development training, and the communities of commitment systems of change. Well, you're still bringing on your third contingent and maintaining getting very good data entry into us. So I first would just like to say kudos to all of you for your hard work with this project. While I say that, I'm really wanting to energize us over this next six-month period. We're going to be talking today about dissemination, and Todd and Crow and the NPO are going to be speaking about disseminating PI throughout your larger system and plans to do that. I also want to add time, perhaps 15 minutes, so that we can talk about dissemination of what we're doing, summarizing the work of this really innovative program to the field. And in that regard, I'm going to ask Todd to lead a discussion about the best ways that we can do that. A couple of the ideas and that I am very interested in pursuing related to this is seeing that the website work that we're doing, I hope our group can give an update on the STAR SI state toolkit that is being developed. But this is going to be the product that we provide to the field to provide them information on how to implement state-level learning collaboratives and work with PI. And in doing this, what we need more than anything from you in the next 6 months is going to be very good summary, perhaps some type of case study if you choose to use that format, but excellent summaries of the work you've done that would be for publication on the website and as part of this toolkit. And when I say summaries, we're equally interested in what you might consider some of the best practices that you feel have emerged through your provider group, through their change projects, and also at the state level. And I'd like to have a conversation about that today to get your input as to how we can do it in a way that we can truly share with CSAT and the field and the new administration who is going to be most interested in this work, and how we can format our final reports of whether they be the semi-annual or the final report of the project in a way that can be published via the web. And finally, we're going to want to update you in the next month on no-cost extensions. I'd like to have each of you email your GPOs on what you anticipate being, if you anticipate that you are going to be requesting no-cost extensions. We are checking with our grants management. I will let a number of you know, for those who've had prior experience with CSAT, there are some more restrictive policies related to this. Although the length of time is still 12 months, there is much closer scrutiny on the grants management side to assure that it is truly closeout activity and not maintaining major work of the grant. So I want you to keep that in mind as you look at your budgets through this year. And I ask each of you to be in touch with your GPO for a one-on-one conversation via email or phone about what you anticipate. As you will be getting your FSRs in January, so you will have a good handle in January on what money you have left to spend out on the program. Any questions of me? Comments, thoughts?
Fran, this is Kelly from Illinois. And I was just wondering, has there been any thought or talk about future funding possibilities? I know we're going into with the new administration, but anything around process improvement, what we've been doing, or some another level of it of some sort for coming from CSAT?
That's a very good question. I should have covered that right up front. We are not authorized in this year to announce a new grant program. because we are under what is called a continuing resolution, DHHS, SAMHSA, essentially has no budget. But we are able and expecting to be able to spend some Star SI dollars through contract mechanisms for this year. We will then be looking to all of you to make sure that for the FY10 budget, your constituencies and others are well aware of the work that we have. We hope to have all the good products, and we're actually feeling quite optimistic that we could maintain a line item as we have now in FY10 and beyond. But we are opening somewhat of a new book. We are in the process of beginning a number of briefings. I am briefing our management team, and CSAT is, of course, working with new OMB and a budget and a transition team that has been reviewing every aspect of our program. And so we all believe there's an excellent opportunity to put us, to assure that we are continued in whatever format, in a line item in the future. And so I do want to thank each and every one of you, because a lot of the good work that you're doing has reverberated across the field. And I will say that within CSAT and a number of other arenas, NASADAT, I've had talks with them, there's a great appreciation for the power of this work and a great interest in continuing it. But I really would not have, I think it'll be the summer or early fall before we have a good picture of what the 2010 budget will look like.
Okay, thank you.
So what I'd like to do a little bit with us, and this is Todd Malfenter from the MPO, is we're starting to, here at the MPO and with, in conjunction with CSAT, starting to think through how we're going to, organize the information and just the lessons learned from this project and do it in a way where others can benefit from it, and honestly the folks in this call can get some credit for the good work that you've been doing. And so right now, we know we want to do that. We're starting to think through how we want to do that, but it'd be great to get some suggestions and your thoughts before putting together any kind of approaches or requests for information. And so I have a couple questions. And the first one is for people in the state world, as you get new information and new content, and how do you prefer to get that? Is it via having it on the NIATX website? Is it email? Is it hard copy publication? What are things we should be thinking about to get the word out to other state SSAs?
Both, Todd.
Hello?
I think both are very good, because when you have the email, then you can forward it on to other providers and your listservs. But I really think that the NIATX website, also the information there is really important, because we refer people to that bank of information a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Todd, this is Bonnie Cohen in New York. I think that sometimes people are so busy that they may know of things like the NIATX website, which people just continually find valuable, but they may not think to go there when they have an issue.
Yep.
So I agree, having both the website updated, but if there can be some kind of a monthly alert or some kind of recognizable source, particularly that has excerpts, something about provider experience, I think that would really get people to be very to use and read what we're talking about.
Okay. That sounds really good. Any other suggestions?
Todd, I noticed in all of our literature, whether it's the website or our hard copies, there has been times where I just needed to ask a quick question, and I know we've eliminated all telephone numbers. So that might be something to, or maybe I just missed it. But on, like, at the last conference we had, when I went through that sheet, I think emails was there, but no telephone number.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, I like technology, but sometimes I like to hear that voice on the other end of the phone to ask that one question.
Yep. I can appreciate that. I'm that way sometimes, too. Or you think you know your question, but you're not sure. If you have a live person, they could help you. You make sure you're asking the right question. Yeah, okay, good. Good. Any other suggestions? These are all really good and appreciated. Okay. If there's no others. And then what content should we be packaging up from this that you folks would feel would be helpful, I mean, for you even, learning from, you know, your peers in this work, or others who haven't been involved? I mean, what content? And I mean, when Fran and I were talking earlier today, I just came up with a real short list of, you know, things around performance management, around spread of process improvement across your provider networks, around, you know, access and retention results you've achieved either, you know, by provider or in a larger grouping. And she even added, you know, things like, you know, provider involvement and incentives. But what are things that we should be, I mean, we're doing case studies. There's a lot of stuff we can do. You folks have done a lot of work. What are things you think would be things we should prioritize at this point?
This is Gina in Iowa.
Yeah.
We're doing a newsletter, and sometimes we don't have a lot of room or space in the newsletter because there's quite a few of us putting in information.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think we might be missing is maybe just an aim and a short synopsis or a summary of the PDSA that we can pass on to not only substance abuse but also maybe some of our mental health and gambling partners that we are working with.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe for more information or who it was that put that together, you know, what state or contact, because we really do encourage our people to contact other states, and I think there's been quite a few other states contacting our people, you know, to maybe do some training or to help out. Does that make any sense, or am I dodging?
Yeah, I think it does. And just to add to it, you know, just to have even a place where there's projects listed.
That's it. That's what I'm getting at.
Yep. There's projects listed, you know, by provider, by states, and you can, you know, dig deeper on the website itself, or you have contacts where you can talk to people.
Yeah, my experiences with Fran, I had looked at the Institute for Health Improvement website, and they had a limit of 2 pages on what were called improvement reports. And they were designed to do just that, and I think our change projects with a little tweaking could do that quite well. We have a lot of requests here for, in fact, Dr. Clark just the other day said, is anybody working in the recovery setting looking at continuation in a recovery support setting? And I think if we began to catalog some of the populations where these change projects are being implemented and or settings, it would also be very helpful to others who are interested.
One of the things that I think has been very important in STAR-SI is that providers have been able to accomplish the objectives that the change projects have, but they also transform their organizations. The culture is different. And so that's some of the richness that I think would be good to catch in case studies or in some category. You know, how has this transformed your organization? How have people, the magic we talked about at the summit, you know, how are people getting to wow in terms of the customer service they're providing? And sometimes that's not evident when you talk about, you know, how well someone's done in improving no-shows. So I think that that's a characteristic we want to be able to capture somehow.
Great suggestion.
This is Lonnie in Iowa. I really like the idea about the organizational transformation. It strikes me that when I talk to providers, frequently they're in the midst of the transformation and don't see it. So maybe some content on how to kind of step back and sort of bullet point the transformation that's been going on so people can have access to it in a sort of visual and objective way.
That's a really neat thought.
And this is Deanna in Wisconsin, and we have asked one of our providers, along with Jay Ford. We're lucky to have, of course, Jay here in the state of Wisconsin to present at our WAOTA conference. That's the Wisconsin Alcohol and Other Drug Association. So they're going to be presenting on culture change at that conference. So that will reach out to a lot of other organizations and agencies.
Great.
Okay. So we've mentioned a lot of things at the provider level. Anything you want to suggest at the state level?
Todd, this is Larry Allen. I think one of the things that could be helpful is a how-to kind of guide about what to do and how many should you try and do this with and where should you do it and what kind of agency are you looking for.
Yep.
Or how to do it within the state and then what types of agencies to try and reach out to get them to start this. Because even at the provider level, when you're working with them, if they start on the wrong project or at the wrong time or it's not even the right agency to go even a step further up, it's that it fails and you really want to kind of start out with a success. So kind of walking them through some of the pitfalls that everyone's kind of encountered throughout this process I think would be really helpful.
Todd, what strikes me, this is Fran, about your comment is that I know it wasn't Todd's comment, but we had a previous conversation about the toolkit of lessons learned that's being developed through the NPO that was to be shared and really enriched and developed by this group. And although there are some generic principles in that book and as that evolves, it strikes me that what you, each of the STAR-SI grantees, has is the actual practical applications. And when you talk about this area, I would think it would be just tremendous to be able to have some very specific, state-specific examples of how you began, who you identified in the provider community first, and why you made those decisions, I think would be just remarkable enrichment to a toolkit. So have we had the chance to share some of the information, some of the work that we're doing in the toolkit with our coaches and providers yet?
Yeah, we've shared the outline with the coaches a little bit, but really we're trying to get things organized before we take it to a broader audience. But
it might help define some of the areas that we could really benefit having practical examples added from our grantees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think right there, Fran, that's the critical thing that we're really trying to learn today is how best do we help the states and help them help their providers get those real world experiences written down into a usable format that they can then use back amongst themselves. And
right,
over the past 2.5 years, 18 to 24 months or so here, we've collected probably 2 or 3 state change bulletins from each state. We've collected upwards of 300 or so project profiles that we have, and those are things that we're able to put back on to the web page or onto the toolkit, and we're really expecting to have, as Larry suggests, is some sort of synopsis and some sort of synthesis of what we're seeing across all those project profiles. But there's some of these, as Bonnie and Lonnie suggest too, there's some of these other things that just aren't aren't mentioned in some of those project profiles, and that's where we're really hoping to get to, I think, with this next level of case studies and case summaries coming out over this final year.
Now, this is Lonnie again. Something that I'm going to try and articulate this, it's just sort of percolating right now. I think it would be really helpful in treatment, some folks respond better to some interventions than others. If we could come up with a sort of checklist or organizational checklist or organizational point of makeup that can tell you if certain sorts of projects are going to be more successful than others. So, for instance, Agency A has a certain funding stream. They have certain, it's a rural versus urban, those kinds of things. Certain projects would tend to be more successful in that environment than in another one. Hit those things. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that from my perspective, that'd be really helpful to be able to kind of sit down with agencies and even here at a state level and say, look, these are the kinds of things that work for your sorts of situations.
Or have had proven results or...
Yeah, right. Best practices kind of thing.
Tried best practice.
Yeah.
This is Mike Quirk. I kind of had the same thought applied more to the state structure. I'm sure there are some types of states. Here in Wisconsin, we have more of a grant structure along with a strong county collaborative relationship versus maybe a state like Maine where, you know, they have a lot of control over the funds through contractual relationships with a certain group of providers. So there may be some state types that, the technical assistance information could be targeted to.
Yep.
Mike, this is Andy. I came on a little bit late, but we certainly have been, we've recognized those types of things, as you mentioned, contracting relationships and the like at the state level. And we're also, to a lesser extent, we're trying to look at some of the provider characteristics that might be predictive of, you know, success in a PI collaborative. So those are angles that we will be including in the toolkits that are coming out in the months to come. So, if you have other...
Your example, Mike, though, is so important because I think the practical examples that you provide us in your final reporting, those states that are similarly structured to Wisconsin will likely be looking very closely at your practical applications, what you did. And I think there is, with a good description of the type of state you are, that the case study will be very relevant to those that are similar to you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. Thanks for taking the time to do this and providing the great suggestions. This is really going to help us organizing how to pull together the information that we're going to request, and I think in the spring here we're going to try to get some write-ups from people on some of the different areas, and then we're going to integrate that into a toolkit for the field to be able to use. So thanks again for your suggestions. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to talk the subject that we're highlighting in the call is the spread of process improvement across a provider network. And really, I guess we could talk about this more generically of just the spread of a technology or an intervention. But really today we're just going to focus on process improvement and really just with the thoughts that your round one, round two, round three, or year one, year two, year three cohorts, you had, in many of your states, you had subpopulations. and would be I assume desirable based on some of the comments we've heard on this call and just from your behavior and state of interest in the past is to get this process improvement approaches that the providers are using to generate results, getting that spread across your provider network. And so what I wanted to talk to you today about is just some strategies and some thoughts for doing that. And I'm gonna start out with my so I know I haven't engineered you folks in a while, but I'm gonna do it now. And in engineering, they sort of have these tongue-in-cheek descriptions of how systems flow or how things get accomplished. And one of them is a set of approaches or two approaches that are called pull strategies and push strategies. And some of you might be familiar with them. They use those terms actually a lot in marketing as well. And other applications. And pull strategies mean that you do something to entice people, or you do something that makes it natural for people to adopt the new innovation. And push strategies are you're basically going out and doing a lot of direct marketing. And the example I want to provide to just sort of illuminate that those two concepts is through Everett Rogers, and I'm sure many folks are aware of Everett Rogers' work, the diffusion work and the spread of innovation, and his sort of classic example was how to diffuse drought-resistant corn to farmers in the Midwest. And this was after the Dust Bowl. And, what are we going to do to get these farmers, using drought-resistant corn when the farmer has used a certain type of corn and it's worked for them in the past. So, boy, if you have something that's working well already, in their opinion, why do you want to switch? But why you want to switch is they've been working well because there had been a decade of relatively moist weather, and should that end, this innovation or this practice that they've been using wouldn't work as well, and maybe even they wouldn't even have a crop and not be able to sustain their farm and the like. So, with that in mind, there's two sets of strategies that the federal government pursued in getting farmers to start using drought-resistant corn. And the one were a set of pull strategies. And the pull strategies were, in some areas, they could actually limit the type of corn that was available. And that's not always you can't always do that, and so in other areas they were did some things that made it so non-drought resistant corn was more expensive, and then in other areas they couldn't do that, so they had different incentives they would give to people so they would be enticed to buy the drought resistant corn. So as you can tell from my pull strategies, these are a lot of kind of things that if we're thinking of PI, are types of things that you could do at the state level, through some of your regulatory mechanisms, payment reimbursement and the like, and we'll talk about that a little bit more here in a minute. The other set of strategies is push strategies, and these are actually some of the more famous ones, because in their push strategies is what the government did is they actually hired ex-farmers and made them what they called field agents, or agricultural agents was the actual term, and they would actually go from farm to farm, explaining to the farmers the reason to go, to buy the new type of corn. And often they'd have with them free samples so they could do test plots, and they would just do a lot of the things that you would do when you're trying to diffuse an innovation. They'd describe the superior attributes. They would demonstrate to them, how it worked and the like. And again, if you think of, process improvement, this thing that some of you have been doing with peer mentors and some of the things you've been doing to have, peers present at your local conferences are the kind of push kind of strategies. And so what I'd like to do on the call, and actually this could work really well because we've already had some very good discussions, is sort of brainstorm, with the group here of, okay, if we're trying to spread, the use of process improvement, NIATECs, the PDFs, walkthroughs, those kind of things, use of data, using data in a way where it's helping state metrics, some of the different NOMS measures and the like. What are pull strategies? What are things that will either incentivize people to use process improvement or make it easy for them to use it? And let's just brainstorm on that a little bit. And I have some things in my hip pocket from things we've seen, actually from watching you folks, but it'd be good to just to hear from you. What are pull strategies that you feel that you have at your disposal, within your state, to pull providers into using process improvement? And really what we're talking about here is the folks who weren't in your year one, year two, or year three cohorts, because those folks, you've been able to give them direct TA, and these folks who have been. What are things that you, what are pull strategies that you can use?
Todd?
Yeah.
This is Michelle Statham from Oklahoma.
Yeah, Michelle.
This is one that's fresh on my mind because it's been discussed in two separate meetings that I've been in the last 2 days. One of the things that Oklahoma did in their substance abuse rules is add that all substance abuse contract providers and state-operated providers have to do a walkthrough each year.
Okay.
So that's one thing that we did. And then what I heard today was not only is that in there, we find it wasn't very effective, and we're trying to work closer with provider certification.
Mm-hmm.
And someone said to me that today that provider cert actually made a comment on their certification recommendation saying that they actually needed to do a better job of coming from the feeling end of a client when they did their walkthrough. So sometimes just educating your own staff about more what we mean when we're doing a walkthrough and what it's like to be a client, they are now sort of helping us as partners to help people do these things more effectively. So that was kind of a double-edged. One's actually a pull and one was a push, I guess, but the pull was to put it in there. The push has been educating people so that they can also help people, meet the standard that we're looking for.
Hmm. So, and the Michelle, just to be clear, was that put in the contract language, or was that a licensure requirement, or both?
Yeah, it's actually in the rule, the statute that says what substance abuse agencies have to do to be certified.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually in their rule.
Okay.
We've done a pilot with the mental health providers in their contract. So far, there hasn't been a lot of discussion about making it a part of their rule. But we'll see.
Okay. Other suggestions? I mean, other things that I've seen is people putting it into contracts. And we see things like to do a walkthrough. We see things like to do actually an improvement project or two or three. We see, and then when you get into some of the metrics portions of it, we see it actually in paper performance kind of revisions or statutes or policy. Other suggestions people have? Anyone else have it as part of their licensure at this point? Because that's another place where you naturally see this a lot, and where the pull strategy actually in general healthcare has been to put process improvement and quality improvement kind of language into the accreditation language. And that's actually, I would say that combined with Medicare starting to show some accountability around some of the quality metrics it was really funny in the hospitals that there's been three phases that I think is really led to quality improvement being part of every hospital. And it started in the 90s and with the accreditation, looking at accreditation standards. And like I said, it started in the 90s with it being in the accreditation standards. Then there was sort of just a general fabric around. Yeah, there's someone that has a cell phone or something where you're moving around a lot, you're getting a lot of noise. And then there was, in the early 90s, you had sort of this after the turn of the century, you had a bit of a fad around patient safety. And then shortly after that, Medicare started putting into their payment mechanism that first people need to collect data around certain metrics, and then the next thing they ask for is to see some improvement. And now, if they see people not showing improvement, they're actually going to dock their pay a little bit, and that has everyone very interested in process improvement at this point. So those are some of the things that happen there. Any reactions to that, or any other suggestions people want to provide?
Well, a couple things. It's not reactions, I guess. And I apologize. I was taking a note and kind of missed some of what you said, Todd. So if I'm repeating what you said, it probably got through. I just think it's mine.
Please go ahead.
We have in our licensure language, we have. Already put in that they have to show a quality improvement plan for each licensure, and we're going to change that into NIATX language and to use NIATX measures for that. Second thing is to, since we're a third-party managed care sort of state, language that in order for people to get a certain percentage of their monthly payment, they have to meet certain performance measures, missions and encounters, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was good. Any other suggestions people have on pull strategies or just comments before we move to push?
Well, Todd, I'm trying to... No. I'll save my comment. I think this would be more of a push. Sometimes it's hard to categorize them.
Yeah, go ahead. Just something that works, you think.
Okay. I mean, I was thinking that one of the pull strategies that's happening right now is, I mean, in Oklahoma, all of our providers, if they're going to contract with us, have to be nationally accredited. Well, all of those accreditations require PI, just like the gentleman said before. You know, they have to have a PI committee. They have to show PI activities. But a lot of our providers have no idea how to go about doing that. They're pretty new to some of this, and so we have, I guess, maybe been the pastors actually, in that we try to blitz those people and say, we have this STAR-SI group out here, this learning collaborative, and we have these NIATX, process principles that we use, and you can employ them, and they have all these forms, and they have this way of doing it. In other words, we offer them this as a tool to do what they're already required to do, but are either doing on their own and feeling rather lost about it, or are just looking for some tools. So I guess that's maybe a push strategy, but it's in direct connection with that pull strategy we have of requiring them to have this accreditation that requires PI. So
that's good. Hey, Mike Cork, are you still on?
Yes.
Yeah, now you folks, I think, have done a really good job of getting different providers involved. What are some of the things you've done? I mean, because you've just, I know you have the different groups and your different, rounds, but boy, you guys have done a lot just to get the word out and get people engaged. What are some of the things you found to be helpful?
Well, I know that we've certainly tried real hard to address barriers that are voiced by the providers. And, one of the things, even though we weren't able to get the STAR-SI process improvement into the rule, we did the next best thing is to offer agencies a waiver of the current program evaluation requirements in lieu of doing the STAR-SI type work. So essentially we were able to do it instead of having to wait 5 years to promulgate some change rules. And one of the things I've observed, not only with StarSI innovations, but other innovations, that agencies are looking for things that work, and you can get a pretty good following if you demonstrate what you have works. And so we just, I think, done a real good job getting the word out and letting them know that this stuff does work. And so I think that's contributed a lot to the agencies signing on.
And what are things you've done to get the word out, Mike?
We, as Deanne mentioned earlier, we do highlight or spotlight the StarSI project in two of our major conferences. And we also have followed the lead that CSAT and others have given us to make sure we have good communication with our state associations, and all of them, to a lot of these groups, you know, you go and you say, oh, have you heard of StarSI? And they go, oh, yeah. So it's just getting the word out through those associations, the Wisconsin Association on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, the Wisconsin Treatment Providers Association, and then the Wisconsin County Association as well.
Okay. Excellent. I mean, I think that sounds like a great way to, you know, start the conversation on push strategies. What are things people have done just to get the word out to the provider community? Also, if I can say real quickly, someone has their speakerphone on. And you're doing a lot of work around your desk, and the sound is really interrupting the call. So if you're not hearing a lot of bangs and shuffling of paper, it's you. And please unmute your phone or mute your phone. So what are things people are doing to get the word out to providers?
This is Sheila. Some of the things that we've done is establish informational booths at our annual conferences around prevention, women's group, and cultural competency seminars. And we always, or since we started at STAR, have included information poster systems and sessions and sign-up information at our FIDA conference, which is the large statewide substance abuse provider and state conference. It's usually highly attended. Some of the other things that we've done to, you know, because sometimes travel is prohibitive, is to we have ongoing webinars through FIDA, which is really good because clinicians can get their CEUs through learning about the process improvements, and we've had at least three of those over the last couple of years, and we also have our newsletter that goes out monthly. So those are some of the vehicles that we're using.
Good. Other comments or suggestions?
We have advertised our Change Leader Academy to mental health and gambling, and at the last one we had folks from both of those disciplines, as well as opening up our state learning collaboratives to basically anyone who's interested. We'll allow them to come and encourage them, especially gambling and behavioral health folks.
I like that idea. You just let folks come.
We got nothing to hide, so we want to.
Yeah.
Now we also did a NIATX 101 for behavioral health folks who didn't have any experience with the principles and methods. We had about 40 people at that.
Wow. That's great.
Todd, this is Steve Gallen.
Yeah, Steve. Hello.
A couple of strategies that we've used in California and in Illinois. We're just starting it up in Illinois, but in California we were quite successful working with the ATTC there in providing advertised workshops in process improvement. And those workshops kind of mushroomed from an initial three that we did around the state. These were day-long workshops. People paid a small fee to attend the workshops. We got partners to help co-sponsor, like counties and other payer groups. We drew crowds from 175 down to about 60, and so far we've done about 12 of those workshops around the state. Very popular, getting the county administrators involved and supportive and excited about the project helped because they really promote the workshops. But that's one way to get the word out, is to do workshops that include some testimonials from providers, the basic principles, how to get started. It's worked very well in California. We're going to try it in Illinois this year. We're going to do three workshops in Illinois.
Good.
We're in the process of discussing in conjunction with our September Learning Collaborative. I just got an email back from Stephen Hacker, and we're going to try and do something with him in conjunction with the Learning Collaborative and get that out to a number of different disciplines on process improvement.
And partners and referral sources and all that we're going to invite.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Any other suggestions or comments? This is really quite a list we got going here.
Well, this is Bonnie again in New York. We do some of the same things that have been to describe, but in recruiting people and getting people to know about what we're doing, we also send mailings out. So, for example, we're going to be using two coaches for the Coaching Academy, and we invited everybody in Long Island which is one of our target areas placing our sites, to just come and hear about what we were going to be doing and to think about becoming a provider. And so a number of times we've done these mailings, just letting people know that this is happening and then creating some forums. So that's been helpful in getting people to telling them in the letters, actually, who else are the providers in their area who are already involved. And that's just a helpful way of creating that kind of seeding that interests.
Yep. Well, very good. Any other comments? I have to say, having watched this deployment happen in hospitals, and I'm just sort of thinking this on my feet, but Everett Rogers talks about innovators, and then the early majority, then the late majority, and then sort of the laggards, the people who sort of bring up the tail, and it seems like in the hospitals the push strategies worked very good for the quote unquote early adopters and even the early majority. And it seems like the pull strategies were needed over time to get the rest of the curve involved. And so I just throw that out for consideration. And I think the push strategies you folks have been talking about is going to bring a lot of people in, and the right kind of people who are motivated. So just some thoughts around that. Okay, any other comments or questions before we wrap up today? Or announcements. Okay. Well, thanks for the participation in the call. I mean, not only taking time out of your schedule, but also we had some very good discussions here, and really appreciate that. And hopefully some will be useful for you. And at the very least, start thinking about what are some of the things that you've done in your project that you think are special and unique and would like to share with others in the form of sort of these case studies we were talking about. And then also keep thinking about how to spread the things that you the PI work that you've already done such a great job of introducing within your state. And that will be all for our call today. Beth, is there anything else we should be addressing?
No, thank you all for joining us today. And, one simple piece of housekeeping, your updated access and recovery, access and retention tables are due January 31st.
Cool.
We'll send a reminder, but we look forward to receiving those from you.
Yeah, and as CSAT is looking at data and performance and projects, that's actually really important at this point. So if you could get that in on time, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it.
All right.
Hey, Todd, I wanted to ask, put this in. If you guys do develop a format or have an idea, as soon as you can, get it to us so we can start working with the providers. You know, we've got learning sessions in February to work with them on this.
Okay.
All right.
It's good to know.
Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.